This is Irish Illustrated Insider, brought to you by Anderson, Agostino & Keller, attorneys at law, with offices in South Bend, Indiana, serving the local community's legal needs with a diverse and innovative group of lawyers. Let their team be your edge on legal matters. Contact the lawyers at Anderson, Agostino & Keller at 574-288-1510 or visit their webpage at aaklaw.com.
Welcome to Irish Illustrated Insider, or I should say the emergency Irish Illustrated Insider here on Friday with Pete Sampson, Tim O'Malley, and Tim Priester. And we are moving up our podcast, fittingly 72 hours, which seems to be the number that we're using here recently as Mike Elko decides to leave Notre Dame after 1 year and take a more lucrative contract at Texas A&M. He signed, Pete, did he not sign a three-year contract with Notre Dame? But obviously that isn't worth much when somebody offers you a little bit more. So Notre Dame will try to dig out of this hole. It's unfortunate coming off the heels of the first January bowl win in 24 years. But now they have to quickly, you know, I don't know exactly what the timetable is, guys, on this, but you want to do this very quickly. You've got another signing date coming up. You've got a couple of defensive players that are considering leaving for the NFL. So you have to be pretty quick on making a decision on a defensive coordinator.
The contact period opens on a week from today, January 12th. So ideally you would have something wrapped up by then, and it would be easy, especially if you're promoting Clark Lee or Mike Elston to the position, to just do that, because there's no HR hurdle to clear there. But Notre Dame does have a dozen defensive players signed. They maybe were going to land one more, probably not now. But it's not a situation where I think they have to rush it. If you want to make more of an inspired outside-the-box hire, you do have some leeway to do that because of the early signing period where you don't need to make a panic move. But if system and continuity are more important, then I think you're promoting from within. And if I had to bet on the hire who Notre Dame's next defensive coordinator is, I would put a decent amount of money on Clark Lee.
Yeah, I would too. And you don't, I'm interrupting you, Tim, I'm sorry, but continuity, you know, you don't always want continuity from a staff, but in this instance, you certainly do with what Mike Elko achieved. Tim, you remind me that Miami scored 41 points and Stanford scored 38, but still, what Mike Elko achieved in getting this defense headed in the right direction. And, you know, you have to be concerned about what this means with Tavon Coney and Jerry Tillery, two guys that are really key to the defensive seven next year.
I think it's one way to consider swaying Tavon Coney, who we heard is, if he can leave, would leave, is to promote from within and to keep his linebacker coach intact. The question I have for that, and I like Clark Lee and I like Mike Elston a lot. I've known Mike Elston. We've all known Mike Elston a long time and know Clark Lee briefly, but was Clark Lee going to be up for any defensive coordinator jobs in America if Mike Elston didn't leave Notre Dame? And that is one thing you have to look at.
Yeah, I mean, probably not, because he's Elko's right-hand man, I guess, maybe.
Maybe next year, but the year after. But and if he would be next year, then, and he's a quality coach, quality coaches are quality coaches, he can jump in and do the job ahead of schedule. But I don't think anybody was thinking, we need to make sure that Clark Lee is Notre Dame's next defensive coordinator. Maybe Mike Elko is the next head coach. He keeps Clark Lee. And, you know, so you got to wonder, is it the best move? I don't know, but I don't think there is a best move right now, because bringing in the guy that, whoever your defensive coordinator you want is, if you bring him in, you're overhauling the system again. And that's tough. That are going to be in a fourth system then.
The seniors and fifth-year seniors are going to have their fourth coordinator in three years.
So maybe the best move is from within. It's maybe a short-term move to find out if it works. It's the best move. I think what it comes down to is there is no best move, because you lost your coordinator you're counting on for at least 2 years or 3 years.
No, it's a terrible situation that you're trying to make the best of. There's not a home run hire to be made in year nine of a head coach that is just sort of going to be permanently under pressure now. 10-3 is not going to change all the dynamics of the previous 7 years. So I do think that's one of the sort of things that Mike Elko could have looked at, in addition to making an extra $500,000 a year, is it was going to be guaranteed at Texas A&M, and I don't have to worry about the head coach getting fired in short order, which you do at Notre Dame. I'm not saying Brian Kelly is actually on the hot seat, but there is no greater guarantee than your head coach just signing a 10-year, $75 million fully guaranteed contract, which is what Jimbo Fisher got at Texas A&M. Now, what I don't really get from Elko's perspective is, like, I don't want to sit here and say, like, well, come on, what's a $500,000 amongst friends right. here? But Mike Elko, if things didn't work out here, if, let's say, Brian Kelly got fired or Brian Kelly went to the NFL, the two extremes where he just departs or he retires, I think Mike Elko has done enough through Wake Forest and 1 year at Notre Dame that he's permanently making more than $1 million as a defensive coordinator in college. He is going to be permanently in demand. So I don't think that risk of, okay, it's year nine, maybe is as big as what everyone would make it out to be. But that's not saying it's not a risk.
I don't want to, as people are wont to do, totally blame Notre Dame, Jack Swarbrick, and the administration, or Mike Elko's a such and such and good riddance. I think somewhere in between, and there's a vast amount in between, there's reality there. How many times, if you own a business, how many times are you going to be willing to renegotiate with a guy? I mean, beyond two? You want to keep, the guy keeps coming back and asking for more, and you're just going to keep renegotiating with him? You're going to be an unsuccessful business owner if you do that.
I would be offended if he came back a third time, as we're told. That's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous to come back three times. Now, obviously, you have to renegotiate because they're offering you a lot of money. You did a great job. For 2 months, you were a Frank Broyles Award candidate for sure.
Yeah.
Things went poorly at the end. He had some two deep, good defensive games mixed into the three poor ones. It's Mike Elko. No one was saying 3 days ago that Mike Elko had a terrible end of the year, so I don't want to start framing it that way. Looking back, you know, when you come back for that third negotiation, maybe somebody says, hey, November was 37, 33, and 38 points given up. So the two times we just gave you a raise in the last 2 days are enough for us right now. I can't blame them for that. If they really made him one of the top five or six paid defensive coordinators,
Notre Dame was
willing to do that after year one, then I don't continually renegotiate with him either.
Did he deserve to be the number one highest paid coordinator in the country?
No.
Well, then top five should be good enough, shouldn't it?
Yes. He could deserve it in a couple years if they go 12-1. I mean, he did a great job.
Right.
Once.
Pete, I saw you wrote down safety play, and that's the issue, that if they hire Clark Lee, they've got to bring in a safety coach, a dynamic safety coach, or you can go out and get a coordinator that's also a safety coach, but
then it's a new system.
Then it's a new system.
And there are, I mean, it's like you're looking at Jim Leonard at Wisconsin, who's a defensive back by trade, or Alex Grinch, who moved from Washington State to Ohio State. I don't think you're going to be able to hijack that now. Mm-hmm. But again, defensive back first type of system. I think the safety play element is critical to whatever Notre Dame does moving forward, whether that's at the coordinator position or it's just at a new position coach, because, O'Malley, you brought up the point of, you know, the Miami game and the Wake game, the Stanford game. I came away at the end of the season thinking more of Mike Elko as a coach because of how November went. Because it made me look at September and October like, wow, this guy was doing a lot with a little. Because as all three of us know, and anybody who really covers the team knows, Notre Dame's defensive personnel was not great. I'm not saying it was terrible, but it was not great, and at safety, it was bad. They have bad safety play.
I didn't realize how bad the safety play was
until
I watched the Citrus Bowl again and realized, if you read the tail of the tape, that Jalen Elliott has no football instincts whatsoever.
Yeah, so
in game 13, starting year two.
Right.
So that is
so, an issue. So for the first time since 1964, Notre Dame safeties did not make an interception in a game. Brian Kelly, when I sat down and talked to him one-on-one in Orlando, made the point that we run a safety-driven defense with no safeties. That's a real compliment to my defensive coordinator because he was able to make that work. That's incredible.
They never made a play. I mean,
no.
Julian Love had, and I know he's a corner, and that's different. You get more opportunities. Julian Love had more passes broken up against LSU than Jalen Elliott had this season.
That's not even mildly surprising.
I mean, right? That's a stat. You can turn stats to work however you want. It's two different positions, but we saw numerous And I don't want to belabor this point.
No, they'll have different starting safeties next year. They'll have different starting safeties,
but there were opportunities in the LSU game that were, it's just, my God, could you just please make a play on the football?
Well, I'm curious at your thoughts on this as a statement of intent of, like, forget the renegotiation aspect of it, for the money aspect of it. I really don't like the notion that Notre Dame, the quote, Notre Dame's just not invested in winning football aspect of it. Unfortunately, the circumstances of the last 24 hours give that camp some real ammo. This is still a program that paid a head coach $18 million to go away, and a school that just spent almost $500 million on a stadium renovation.
And they've got a new facility about to, they're about to start a new facility.
So clearly they're okay spending money on some things, which makes me think that there was a breakdown of trust with Mike Elko at some point on the third renegotiation. But how far away from making the playoffs does Notre Dame football feel to you guys right now?
Just illustrating that there is no good hire, or no sure hire, because you could hire the best available defensive coordinator you think you could poach, and you're still changing systems on the kids again. And I don't know what Clark Lee will be as a defensive coordinator. And I don't know what Mike Elston, I think Mike Elston would do a good job, but I wasn't thinking Mike Elston should be their next defensive coordinator 1 year ago, so why would I think it right now? I think he's a really good football coach, and he's going to be a head coach soon, but I just, exactly 365 days ago,
no.
We sat here and said, no, they have to go outside. Now we're saying they probably have to stay inside. And oh, it makes sense. No, because they brought something in. They brought something in that seems like they're building now.
I mean, we do have
Clark Lee is outside.
Yes.
The spirit of Clark Lee is outside.
Clark Lee is coached. Clark Lee has coached with Mike Elko for two seasons. Yes. One at Wake Forest, one at Notre Dame.
And I will say, when I mentioned that, hey, maybe Tavon Coney stays if you have Clark Lee or Mike Elston. Obviously, if Mike Elston's elevated, you hope Clark Lee stays to coach linebackers. You can't make the move because you want Tavon Coney to stay. I know he's your best player, but like last year, I want to make that clear when I said maybe it'll sway him. Maybe it will. That would be a byproduct of it happening, and he is their most important player of the four that might have gone. Equanimeous St. Brown was the least. You don't make that move because of that, because remember, we interviewed everybody last year at USC, and they all said you absolutely have to hire Craig Hudson and Mike Elston, and all the players said that, and we knew that wasn't true either.
Yeah. Well, players are going to say hire from within.
They're not going to say I want the Wake Forest defensive coordinator.
Apparently, that was why SMU went into a bowl game and did not want to play a bowl game because they didn't hire from within.
Oh yeah, well, the players wanted Tyrone Willingham to stay for a fourth year, so it's like they're even though they're the closest to the situation, they are the worst arbiters of that kind of decision. The Elko situation to Clark Lee, I think that Clark Lee would at least be in the spirit of he stand Sanford, somebody that wasn't just like a BK guy.
Right.
We need a comfortable working relationship
I
here.
I think we're beyond that with Elston, though, at this point. He's just a Notre Dame football coach for 9 years now. Right? He's the lone guy that...
Well, you remember
I know he's a BK guy, but it's...
He coordinated a defense in 2005 with Bob Diaco. So, I mean, we saw how he could say Greg Hudson, they did a good job of solidifying things last year. But Notre Dame can't go back to the bend but don't break, keep the football in front of you defense. And the thing about Clark Lee, I don't know enough about him. I don't think any of us know enough about him to be able to say, okay, well, he's going to continue what Mike Elko does. We have no way of knowing, Notre Dame has no way of knowing whether he can call the right defense at the right time, the way Elko seemed to be able to do. And I started my column with this. The last series of the Mike Elko era at Notre Dame, LSU was 0-for-6 throwing the football.
Oh, I'm not, when I give the 37, 33, 38, I am not saying they're better off without Mike Elko. I'm saying that maybe he shouldn't be the highest paid defensive coordinator in the history of college football simply because Notre Dame was pretty good on defense this year.
I agree.
Yeah.
Fair?
I agree. It's unfortunate. Okay. It's like the market's the market.
Yeah.
Like, and that's something Notre Dame is going to have to swallow hard on at some point, because they can look at it and say, wow, Mike Elko, $2 million. Are you crazy? Like, that's nuts. Well, 5 years from now, there's probably going to be five or six $2 million coordinators. And at that point, will Notre Dame be like, Well, that's crazy. $5 or $6 million, and then 5 years from that, it's 15, and is at that point, it's not even going to be like, well, maybe we should pay $2 million. Like, it just, the market is moving in one direction. Will it blow up at some point? Maybe, but it seems like every time you have a discussion about that salary is insane, whether it's a head coach or a assistant coach, 3 or 4 years later, you look back and you're like, wow, that was a real bargain. Yeah.
Do we have, I'm just throwing this out here, do we have any knowledge or intel saying that Mike Elko didn't like it at Notre Dame, didn't like working for Brian Kelly?
No, we don't. I mean, I think that I would take Brian Kelly at his word and Mike Elko at his word on this point that, for the most part, like, he enjoyed working at Notre Dame. I will say that not everybody on the staff is, like, thrilled about 100% of the things at Notre Dame, like taking a home game and moving into Yankee Stadium.
Well, they're logic-based people.
Yeah. That's logic. Yeah. So I think there has to be some recognition of, like, what are we doing here? But I don't think that there was a personality conflict between Kelly.
Nor did I ever get that impression. I was just throwing it out there as possibilities.
I think the other coaches on the staff really liked Elko. Offensive, defensive, special teams. Like, I think this staff really got along, which is why my column had a shelf life of 24 hours. Yeah. That, like, for Notre Dame to make the playoffs, they have to have a very highly skilled and highly functioning together cohesive coaching staff. And this year they had it, and it all went away. Yeah. 72 hours after the bowl game.
You know, Mike Elko strikes you or struck us as a real down to earth guy. I don't know that I'm ever going to use that term again for any football coach. Right. Did he make a down to earth decision here for an extra $300,000 or whatever it
was? Or half million.
Yeah, and Jesus, how long does it take us to make that much money? I mean, it's crazy to criticize somebody.
Yeah, I don't know
like
if you
that.
Go by percentages of
no, and I don't know, and I'm not saying that. I don't want to say
just because you
that.
Have 1.5 doesn't mean you don't want another $500,000. Right. It's not like saying I have $20. I
get
that. 24.
I get it.
It's hard to tell people what to do with their money, but I agree. At some point, if I were Notre Dame, I would just be like, how many times are you going to come back to renegotiate in a 24 or 40 hour period?
Yeah, and I do think it'd be a situation where, let's say, he came back that third time and Notre Dame's like, fine, 1.9. And he was like, all right, I'll take it. I think that there would be a breakdown in the chemistry on the staff at that point. I think that you would have sort of swallowed a poison pill in some ways if you're talking about just sort of the staff working together and everyone trusting each other at in the way that I think was the case last year. It's unfortunately, this is something Mike Elko said to us down in Orlando 2-3 days before the Citrus Bowl, I believe. I think it was January 29th
in the press conference. That's why I said 72 hours before, 72 hours after.
Yeah, I think continuity among the staff is huge. I think personality-wise, you've got a bunch of guys that want to win and want to do what's best for Notre Dame. You don't have a lot of egos in our room. You don't have a lot of agendas in our room. So that has made it really easy. I think we just blended well and put a good product on the field. I mean, that all obviously looks completely disingenuous now. But at the time, Mike Elko had turned down Texas A&M at least once and had turned them down a second time, only to have them come back a third time. And ultimately, that is what got the deal done.
And let's be realistic here. Mike Elko's not sitting at the negotiating table with Jack Swarbrick.
No,
his representatives are, but he's empowered them to make the decision.
Yeah, but it's easy to hold that hard line when you're not there staring down
people
in the face.
Yeah, I know.
That's your boss,
and you try to hire the strongest, strong-willed attorneys that you can, and he obviously had those guys working in his favor.
Two of his players still pending decisions. Tavon Coney, who we mentioned, and Jerry Tillery.
And Josh Adams.
Elko's players. And Josh Adams, obviously. Equinemius St. Brown does declare. My feeling on St. Brown is the loss of him matters only because they're probably losing Stepperson. I think if Kevin Stepperson was back on Notre Dame's team next year, he'd be the lead receiver, and the other guys would fill in. They wouldn't miss St. Brown, who was not to be counted on in talented guy, not to be counted on in crunch time, and tell me when he came through when it mattered most.
In 2016 or in 2017, rather, he didn't. Yeah, no, I get it.
I'm not saying he's
I
not get, a good player, no, I but get he couldn't it. Use him. But no, Kevin Stefferson's a loss, and St. Brown's just not going
to
be there.
Right, and Notre Dame feels comparable to what you're saying there.
Yeah, the coaching staff feels the same, and they would have loved to have Stefferson now, killing people next year, probably.
Yeah,
he was the player.
The St. Brown departure, nonplussed would be too cold about it, but definitely not worked up. I mean, there was a big gap between, if you look at the four guys, Adams, Coney, Tillery, and St. Brown. St. Brown was fourth, and there's a huge gap between three and four.
I'll say this.
And you're speaking for the coaching staff right now. Yeah. Just because we have the opinion, but you're actually talking about the coaching staff.
This is my very educated opinion on this one. So they will move on from this. That's not a big deal. Now, Josh Adams, I think a decision was probably going to be imminent. Could be by the time you listen to this podcast. That would be a blow if he left. And I'm not sure what he's going to do, but... And Coney would be a blow. Tony would be a blow too. But with St. Brown, I mean, just look at the wide receiver position coming back. It's going to be a bit of a rebuild. It's a good time if you're a 4-star freshman coming in, as Micah Jones, Braden Lindsey, Kevin Austin, and maybe Lawrence Keys will be, because it's going to be they'll be starting over in some ways. And you know, you've got Chase Claypool, but that's it. And Chase Claypool is. He's been kind of a part-time player. He's shined brightly at times, but has vanished in others.
And you mentioned Keys. Theoretically, a position just opened up for him with St. Brown's decision, so to speak. But St. Brown, I look at St. Brown as another one of those players that you hear me talk about, where he's taking the next step in his football career so his football career can end sooner.
It's so hard.
I'm sorry, but I don't think... Does Equanimee St. Brown play football like he has a passion to be a football player?
No. If he did, he would just be the biggest blow in the world because force no matter who's throwing the ball.
He's making a move so his football career can come to a close sooner and he can move on with his life.
I don't even know where to go.
I know you don't agree with it, but it's a clever little angle, isn't it?
Speaking of which, CJ Sanders will graduate and transfer as well.
Yes.
Not a surprise that he'll be moving on. It is good for him to graduate in 3 years. That's a nice effort for him.
Yeah. Vanderbilt highly involved in that situation. I think it would be a surprise if that's not where he ended up, which means he could be playing in Notre Dame Stadium next year.
That'd be fun.
Yeah. Also, Montgomery, Van Gorder, Pete Maqua doing fifth years elsewhere. They were not really part of our 85-man projection for 2018 anyway. So it's not like that opened up a scholarship.
And there'll be a couple more.
But I will say Montgomery, Van Gorder was, and the great fun that Notre Dame had with him as a holder in the video and stuff, he was a damn great holder.
Oh, and he was tremendous. And he was a very well-liked player on the team. Like, he was the ideal guy that came in without a scholarship and ended up having a scholarship for 4 years to be a holder and a backup. He's a super well-liked guy on the team. But, of course, you're going to leave and want to try and play some football if you're him because he is at that level where he can play at Youngstown.
That was something that we had heard from the previous, I think it might have been a Sanford take, that Montgomery Van Gorder was good enough to be a MAC quarterback. So if you drop down below that a level, he should be able to play there, which is, you know, kind of a cool opportunity there. You can just go out and sort of play football and have fun with it.
Tough news for Notre Dame basketball. Bonzi Colson out, had surgery yesterday.
This all happened this week.
Yes.
Bonzi Colson has announced Mike Elko.
The week's not over.
It's not. This weekend's going to be a thing.
Well, Matt Farrell goes down with an injury the other night, and O'Malley's looking over at the bench, and everybody's crying and hugging him. And he's
thinking, it was over.
Holy cow, his season's over too, but fortunately... It's not, but he has a serious left ankle injury that will almost undoubtedly keep him out of the Syracuse game. But Bonzi Colson had surgery. I asked Mike Bray after the game, you know, because they list him 8 weeks recovery. And so I asked, you know, usually we hear 2 to 4 weeks or 4 to 6 weeks. Is 8 weeks the minimum? And he said, yes, it is. So that makes it very difficult. I mean, I think they're hoping that he gets a solid week of practice before the ACC tournament starts. But at that point, it could be too late.
If they're 9-9, you might need Bonzi to help you win an ACC tournament game. And he might not be able to, being 2 weeks out. But he would probably be able to help you if you were to sneak into the NCAA tournament because you're 2 weeks removed from that time. And, you know, he's out there taking jump shots and everything. It's just a sad situation that he has to have surgery. He could play. He could play against Syracuse, but it would eventually go. It's a stress fracture that is going to be a problem.
Right, and he was ultimately, regardless, was going to have surgery to put a spur on the fifth metatarsal or whatever it was. But wasn't it interesting the other night that, and we're not saying for a second that this translates when they have to go on the road for nine games, because I want you to express your theory, O'Malley, when you talk about the Syracuse game this weekend, but. You know, they had great chemistry the other night, man. They were moving the basketball. They played with confidence. They went for it. It was good to see. It was a pretty cool, you know, and it's kind of a typical Bray team reaction, though. You get some adversity, and you can see him pulling them together, saying, hey, man, we're right where we want to be. This is how we thrive. We're going to take care of business. And they played great the other night.
It was a game we thought they'd win. They won in a much more spectacular fashion than I thought they would. I thought emotion would carry them. Farrell was off to a really good start. DJ Harvey, this is big for his development. And this happens to Mike Bray teams, like this happened to Bonzi Colson. Zach August had to miss the game to Georgia Tech in Bonzi Colson's freshman year. Notre Dame was a contender, but you thought, boy, that Zach August, is this going to be more than a one-game suspension? And Colson shows up, and he's just the best guy off the bench they had in the Bray era that year as a freshman. So Mike Bray will find a way to win some games, but this schedule is ridiculous. Unfortunately, they have won two of their three easiest home games already, and I think they could have won them maybe. I think if you had put a better team in there, they could have beaten them on emotion and with Bonzi Colson that first game.
Right.
They have four winnable, realistically speaking, anyone can beat anybody in college basketball, but four realistic winnable road games at Georgia Tech, at Boston College, at Wake, and at NC State. NC State is better than they looked against Notre Dame, but they've suspended their point guard for felonious assault. I mean, they beat number two Arizona. NC State beat Arizona.
Man, they were bad.
They were awful. They were a bad basketball team, and they didn't want to play once they were getting killed.
You know, and you mentioned Boston College, but obviously Boston College is a better, I mean, we've seen already a better basketball program.
I just mean winnable.
No doubt.
And then you have BC at home and Pitt, who is really down at the dumps. Yeah. You're not sweeping those four winnable road games, though, so you're going to have to find an upset somewhere. And what the loss of Bonzi does means that you cannot win at Duke and Virginia now, because you probably weren't going to win at Duke and Virginia anyway.
Yeah.
Mike Bray is 2-9 at Syracuse. They are 2-0 coming off a big emotional win. Matt Farrell's not going to play. Syracuse is coming off a road loss and coming home at 1-1. If you guys happen to be driving by the desert and see a big building, go in, find the point spread, and put it on Syracuse. And see if Notre Dame can be 3-1 after they travel to Georgia Tech next week, because they are going to lose at Syracuse.
Didn't I say that when Notre Dame went to Michigan State? I did.
Yes. The basketball? Yeah. You're right.
All right.
It's going to be like that game. But that's okay.
Handicacking advice from O'Malley.
My point was, if they can beat Georgia Tech next week, they'll be 3-1, which is what they would have been with Bonzi Colson. So then you start your season. They would have been 3-1 with Bonzi Colson.
But boy, the immediate schedule after that is very,
very
difficult.
It gets brutal, and they got to find a way to win nine. Nine's what gives you a chance, and I know people are listening now. Some are thinking, sure, they can do it, and some are laughing that they couldn't conceivably win nine in this league, but...
It'll be kind of, I mean, it's kind of fun to watch a Mike Bray team try to reinvent itself, and few are better at it than he is. I don't think it's enough to finish 9-9 in the conference without Colson, but.
You made a good point. We had him at 10-8 with him.
Yeah.
So that's,
we had him 10-8 with him, to think 9-9 with him.
Does Notre Dame make the NCAA tournament?
I don't think they will.
I would say no, but
I'm not out of this world.
Bray has been doubted before in difficult situations. This may be, however, the most difficult situation.
Just because Farrell comes back against someone doesn't mean he's Matt Farrell either.
Right.
I mean, he's going to be chased around by Louisville guards eventually.
Right. He badly sprained that foot or ankle.
It's like this reminds me more of the 2013-14 season when Jerry Grant got suspended.
Better chemistry maybe with this team, though, with they're used to winning, because that team, I don't want to put guys on blast, but those guys had never won anything.
Right.
You know, these guys have a winning culture at this point.
You know, they come back, they beat Duke in the home opener of the league, and then it just fell apart from there. I mean, that team had Zach August, Atkins, Demetrius Jackson, Connaughton, Beecham, and Vesturi off the bench.
Like, Derek Sherman, but those guys weren't
They weren't those guys.
I hear what Zach you're August saying, couldn't be counted on for anything. Demetrius Jackson was in his own head and couldn't be counted on for anything. Those guys weren't those. BJ Beecham was not the next couple years. Vesturi is a steady guy that got to start. You're relying on Eric Atkins and Garrick Sherman. Connaughton was, a good... That's the guy that you think would have helped them be not 6-12.
I'm just saying, would that team have beaten this team? I don't know, but it would have been competitive, so which is the problem.
Good call. That's a good call. Three of us say right now that they're not going to make the NCAA tournament.
I don't think they'll make it, but I think they'll play pretty good basketball.
I love that. I love that because I'm just really curious to see how he reinvents them. And we got a hint of it. A couple people asked me before the game, "Well, you think he's going to go to the burn?" I said, "No, I don't, because I don't think that that's the route to go with the personnel that he has." I mean, with Bonzi Colson, you would go with the burn. So slow down and make it a half court game, but.
You don't think so?
He won't go. They don't have the.
He doesn't want to do it. I'm not saying he won't.
Yeah.
Because the other way may not work.
He may have to at Duke.
He said the other night. Because everything's on the table.
Yeah, I guess I kind of think that they will because they can't play an up and down.
I think you got to let him play with
six players.
I think he feels that they can play more of an up and down game. He likes the idea of Harvey being a four, which is what Condon played. As an undersized four, not that he's Connaughton, but boy, I mean, he played really well the other night and very aggressively. And so I think right now, Bray feels like up-tempo, let him go for it is the right route to go. He may feel differently after the next two road games.
Yeah, I mean, it may just be, it's going to be a combination of approaches.
He said, because he was asked about identity moving forward, and he talked about what he liked right now, but he said, hey, everything's on the table.
Could be fun to watch. They're going to get hammered in some games, but those games only count as one loss. And they got to get kind of lucky in the close games at home where you can upset Louisville or Florida State or something like that. Because you could beat anybody at home in college basketball. I'd like to point out the team we saw Wednesday night in South Bend beat number two Arizona. That team is awful. And they beat Arizona.
I love that there's an NC State Twitter account on 24/7, and they were charting NC State shooting percentage on layups.
Oh my God.
It wasn't very good.
They were bad.
It was like 50%. They had one field goal in the first 9 minutes of the second half against Notre Dame without Bonzi Colson and Matt Farrell.
Oh, man. What a week. All right, well, that's it for segment one. We'll move on to questions. As you might imagine, we have a lot of them next. Irish Illustrated Insider.
Irish Illustrated Insider is brought to you by Anderson, Augustino, and Keller, attorneys at law, with offices in South Bend, Indiana, serving the local community's legal needs with a diverse and innovative group of lawyers. Let their team be your edge on legal matters. Contact the lawyers at Anderson, Augustino, and Keller at 574-288-1510 or visit their webpage at aaklaw.com.
Burning up the board, segment two of Irish Illustrated Insider. We start with a question from Wash ND. How would you grade Jack Swarbrick's last two moves? The Syracuse game being moved and now allowing Mike Elko to leave because they wouldn't match his offer from A&M.
I mean, definitely different grades. I'd say that the Shamrock series is like a D.
Nonsensical.
Yeah, yeah. How is it only a D?
like a D means F.
Okay. Like you turn in a paper and it's like what you did the wrong assignment kind of thing. The Elko situation, C-. It's bad for Notre Dame next year. If you want to divorce the well, how much money do we really want to put into the coaching staff? Do we have sort of an academic balance to uphold at Notre Dame? Those aspects, I guess, you can sort of factor into it. But in terms of, did Notre Dame get closer to making the college football playoff or farther away from making the college football playoff? They got a lot farther away from making the college football playoff by Mike Elko leaving. So it sort of gets back to that line that I hate. Is that, well, Notre Dame's just not that invested in winning. Well, Texas A&M clearly is more invested in winning than Notre Dame, and they got burned by Texas A&M.
Grading on a curve, the Elko situation's a triple F minus because they just blew up exactly what they had planned for.
They also got much further away from winning a national title with the decision about Syracuse being played at Yankees.
Yeah, but you can overcome that. That's... Notre Dame could just win the game that's played at Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, I got you.
It's a nonsensical move, but it... Doesn't make any sense.
It's an unforced error.
There was
no Texas A&M forcing you to move the game. There was no other party involved. You just did that unilaterally. It makes no sense.
I'll use the same term I did before. It was a selfish decision on Notre Dame's part.
Yeah.
Right. Where we can't know every aspect of the... I mean, I think we've drilled down pretty far. We can't know every aspect of the Elko negotiation. Right. You know, you can't...
I feel like we know...
most of it. That's the important one. We do, but I'm saying that at some point, in your Notre Dame, at some point, you don't pay the guy that much.
Yeah, how did...
I mean, if he came back and he was like, I would like to travel to the office by hot air balloon every day. Like, I mean, we don't know that, but I think, you know, just from a financial aspect, if Notre Dame has the money to pay whatever it wants.
Sure.
It chose not to due to some reasons I understand based on sort of like the nature of the school. And I do think that...
Oh, that's always going to come into play, though.
At some point, you have to have people who want to be here. If Mike Elko keeps looking at Texas A&M, clearly he doesn't want to be at Notre Dame as much as you thought that he did. And that's a miscalculation on Notre Dame's part as they went through the renegotiation. But...
Because, you know, I mean, if he turned it down twice, then he's now in complete control with his people and saying, I don't want to hear it. We're done with that. And he obviously didn't do that.
To bottom line this, though, we have said for more than a year, this is a 2-year minimum investment that Jack Swarbrick made in keeping Brian Kelly and hiring new coordinators and strength staff. And a big part of that just took a massive hit.
The biggest. I mean,
the strength and conditioning programs are a pretty big deal.
I think that
too,
you could argue that Elko is 1A to Harry Hiestand in the best assistant coaches Brian Kelly has hired. So that hurts.
I guess what would be the what if Matt Bayless left and Elko stayed?
I mean,
because we don't know. It's too much of a, I guess, November collapse too. I can say anything about November and it ruins everybody's reputation.
I think the Matt Bayless hire is...
Right? I mean, what? Yeah. They're no better November than they were last year.
The Matt Bayless hire is sort of like, oh, well, we more than doubled our win total from last year type of thing. You were going from almost nothing, like a dysfunctional strength program, to something that's really good. Now, is it the best one? No, but it's good. But I think there are a lot of good strength coaches.
I agree with that. And I don't think you can compare a strength coach to a game day football coach. A game day football coach has to, he's got to make decisions opposite of the guy opposite the field. A strength and conditioning coach.
But for 2 months, the strength and conditioning coach was the story in Notre Dame.
Yeah, that's going to get a really hard look in the offseason. Hopefully by Brian Kelly, because what happened in November, as much as they protested it at the time, it happened. They wore down. They ran out of gas in November, and like you're never going to make the playoffs if you have to do that.
Hoffy 111, how much more attractive is the Notre Dame defensive coordinator position now as compared to last year? That's a good question.
More? I mean, it's definitely more attractive.
I would think.
When you factor in the 21 guys they have signed, 12 of them being
right, the guys coming back. I mean, the defense that you had this year and the percentage of guys that are coming back, Tillery Coney, going one way or another. But
I think they can attract guys. It's just we're not sure that it's just not the ideal situation that they have to attract guys. Those are two different subjects right now.
Yeah.
All of us saying, like, I don't know if they should bring in an outside hire because it upsets the apple cart. Well, I think they can bring in a pretty good outside hire. But is that better? Those are different things, but there's a lot of guys that would like to coach the defensive talent coming in and the young defensive talent, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's like, are you going to make an outside hire? In some ways, I think you have to restart the clock that they started last year on the 3-year investment in Brian Kelly as the leader of the program.
Made a lot of people happy.
I was just going to say, I don't think there's an appetite for that right now. So it's... Is the roster better today than it was last year?
With Coney and Tiller. Let's just say they stay. Because it's depressing the other way.
I think the answer is yes. Because, I mean, look at how we viewed the roster at the beginning of last year. Defensive tackle, total mess. Safety, total mess. Cornerback, we felt might be good, weren't sure. Linebacker, we thought would be pretty good. And if Coney's back,
it could be
your
better.
Two best linebackers return. Meanwhile, the sophomore class of Okwara, Kareem, Dalen Hayes now are juniors when they should be making a huge jump forward.
Yeah.
I think this roster is much better. Unfortunately, it's the whole year 9, when's this going to come to an end type of situation. I mean, I think Brian Kelly has sort of said, like, you know, you don't really coach Notre Dame for more than 10 years. When you get to the year 9, you're like, we're uncomfortably close to that now.
We're certainly at that stage where you're counting years now. I mean, that comes up frequently. That's probably not a great thing. You know, I mean Elko's a pretty damn good recruiter too. I'm kind of reverting back to our previous subject, but I mean, that's a huge loss there as well.
Yeah, I mean that's a good thing to spin into the next question. Up to this point, Notre Dame has, this is from Head Designs, Notre Dame appears to have put in early work to land a banner 2019 defensive class, especially on the defensive line. How big of an impact does Elko leaving on Notre Dame's ability to land the players it started strong with? Do you see any risk of losing some of those kids to, well, to Texas A&M? No, on the A&M part. Probably.
Notre Dame doesn't go head-to-head with Texas A&M now, frequently.
But they have, like, one of their top defensive line prospects, I think Hunter Spears is from Texas. Their top safety prospect that they really, really want, Brian Williams, also from Texas.
Well, that early signing period.
Mike Elko will be all over those guys.
That early signing period before every coach and coordinator leaves is ridiculous.
Yeah. I think certainly coaches enjoy it once you have all those kids signed. And I think even we, I mean, we're kind of happy those guys are signed and you just kind of move into a...
Everybody's happy but them.
Yeah, right.
I kind of feel like all this stuff with Elko would have happened just on February 8th instead. A&M would have just waited.
Yeah, well, I guess they did not, at a much smaller scale. Kerry Cooks left the day after signing day.
Alford left right after. Yep. So it's like, I think people blame the early signing period and like it exacerbates it a little bit, but I don't think it changes the fundamentals.
Right. It makes it easier because now is the time a lot of coaches start looking after the bowls.
Yeah, I think it's better for the programs who have to hire because then you have some time to make it up before the late signing period.
Right.
Opposed to everything coming after February and you're screwed. You have no real out at that point. But it's Elko on our recruiting podcast, me, Loy, Sinclair, we all started listing our recruiter of the year on the staff, and we all went with Mike Elko because of what he's done really at every level of the defense. Linebacker needed a total rebuild. They did that. They needed elite talent at safety and corner with Griffith and Derek Allen. I think they got that done too. You know, defensive tackle, I like Jason Adamolola a lot. I think the other guys that they have at that position are just good.
I like Franklin more than that.
But it's like, they signed sort of a Jamie and Franklin regularly.
Yeah,
I don't think that they signed Jason Adamolola regularly.
They didn't sign the Jamie and Franklin in 2015, I can tell you that much, because that's where the hole is right now.
Yeah, so it's...
Senior defensive tackles coming back.
Elko was a friggin' dog on the recruiting trail. Yeah. He did a great job. He worked his butt off on it. So that one... That it hurts Notre Dame in multiple ways.
This is just this is quite a way to start the new year podcast.
And our final question is from Port ND. So, about that safety play in 2018.
The question made me laugh right away, but you know what? It'll be better by default. How's that? Just roll them out there. Roll
be better, two new guys be better out there. Because there are will be new players.
There'll be better players, yeah. I hope Gilman is as advertised because they need a somewhat veteran. He'll be a junior. He's a rookie to the program, but he's a somewhat veteran presence back there. I mean, I think that's why Nick Coleman won the job so easily because he knew what he was doing and he was coachable. It was never a good sign when Nick Coleman went from being the fifth best corner to the no doubt starting safety day one of spring. That's a bad sign. It's not like, wow, this guy just must be the most natural safety of all time. It was, no, we need someone.
If there aren't changes at safety next year, I refuse to do tail of the tape. I can't watch another game like I did on
can
the flight.
Can you at least do like offensive
from,
tail of the tape?
I'll do offensive tail of
the
tape.
They won the game and you don't want to watch it again.
How about tail of the tape on running plays? Against. I'll do tail of the tape on third and long passing plays against.
All right, I'll evaluate Jordan Jenmark Heath against the run. That was enjoyable.
Yeah, so you have Jenmark Heath, Alohi Gilman, Derek Allen. I mean, I think Houston Griffith is going to be. We're different on that, I guess. But just next year, you have.
You think he's going to be at safety?
Yeah, because next year you have five corners that can play.
I'm just saying. My whole thing on that is I wouldn't discount him at corner because I think that he's got corner fundamentals.
We have 9 months to discuss the safety play, but I think Julian Love, I guess, will just stay and be the most dominant corner.
Yes.
I guess we'll just stick a corner and win the Thorpe Award.
And win the Thorpe Award.
You
so
have to
I guess
stop
we were wrong
pleading.
About that one.
You
have
to stop pleading for him to move to safety.
Well, I'll tell you what. If he moved to safety, their safeties would have been better. So it can't be wrong on both counts.
That's
true. But that's a funny question by Port. They will be better because they're going to have better players. How do you like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's a good analysis there, O'Malley. All right. Well, that's it for this week's emergency podcast. I guess we'll see if you hear from us again in short order. It might not be good, but we'll be sort of podcasting as necessary moving forward here at least once a week. Maybe we'll be back on Monday. Could have draft decisions from Tillery, Coney, Adams, Hoops at Syracuse. Maybe there will be a defensive coordinator higher by that point. Unlikely, but
we had so much fun with the last podcast while still in Orlando.
Yeah.
Looked
that
different.
Was fun. Yeah.
It did.
Yeah, room. It takes me back.
Room 1208.
1208.
I missed 1208.
I thought we were going to people banging down the door at 1208. Pete said the number so much. That was my room. Yeah. I'm glad people didn't just decide to show up. You so graciously gave out my room number multiple times.
Yeah, you got out of there okay. But so maybe we'll be back Monday. We'll see. There's obviously stuff to talk about in Notre Dame football forever and ever moving forward. So until our next podcast, whenever that may be, Tim Priester, Tim O'Malley, I'm Pete Sampson. Thanks for listening.